It's Friday, the 5th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Terence Ross. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Marvin Dion. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Marvin Dion, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the show. It is very, very straightforward. Quick recap, yesterday we announced the winner of the 500th iTunes review jersey contest. And that was Emma Sizzle, and Emma Sizzle did get in contact with me today, and he is going to have a jersey sent out to him very shortly. So congratulations to him. Still waiting on Ron, 120932. If by tomorrow's podcast I have not heard from Ron, who is the winner of the 400th jersey, number 401 gets that jersey. So, you might still be in with a chance if you were that person. Now, today's episode is a special sort of milestone episode for the show. I'm not a big person, I'm a relatively big person, but I'm not a person who likes celebrating things like birthdays or milestones, so I'm not going to do anything too outlandish, but it is the 500th episode of the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast, and it is about 2 days away from being the two-year anniversary of this podcast, and about 2 days ago, we also passed 1 million downloads for just this season, so some fantastic numbers. Every thanks goes out to all you guys who have supported the podcast, whether that be through listening, downloading, leaving a review, going to the sponsors pages, mentioning the podcast on your social media accounts, in forums, in your leagues, wherever it may be, getting the word out and having the podcast grow from something that the first 20, 40, 50 episodes, there was, I reckon, 30 people listening to the podcast. Hey, so if you're one of those guys who listened to the early podcast, congratulations for still being here and for finding the show initially. But now it's grown to obviously a much bigger audience, which is superb. So thanks to everyone who has listened to the podcast and has left reviews. And if you've just found the podcast now, or if you found it 2 years ago, or at the start of the season, or at the start of last season, a big thanks goes out to all you guys for helping the podcast grow to where it's been. And to where it's going. Also, thanks to our sponsors, Moneyball. Again, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. Get on there if you are looking to play some daily fantasy sports. And Basketball Monster, which has been superb for me to be working at Basketball Monster this season. They've been great, the guys over there. The other guys there working with me, Kyle McEwen and Matt Smith, and to Ken, the owner of Basketball Monster. He's done a fantastic job with that site, which has been going for a long time, and I'm very, very pleased to be a part of the setup over there. And a big thanks to the guys at RotoWire as well, who helped me get my start in this industry a couple of years ago. That's enough of that sort of crap, I think. I don't want to hear too much more of that, do you?
Let's get to it.
Cool. Now, before we get into the lines of the night, let's recap the Facebook and Instagram contests from yesterday. On Facebook, the contest was, how many points is Trevor Ariza going to score? The answer was 22, and nobody got that correct. No one. Disappointing. On Instagram, the contest was, how many free throws will Andre Drummond miss? The answer was 6, and SpiderDan86 got it correct. So a big shout out to SpiderDan for guessing 6 missed free throws for Andre Drummond. Every day I'm going to have a contest on Facebook and a separate one on Instagram. Follow the Instagram account, redrock_bball. Enter that contest each day. And on Facebook, do the same thing, which is it's facebook.com/redrockbasketball, should know the site by now. Go over there and make a guess and interact with the other posts. Getting a lot more conversation happening now on those posts with people, chiming in little things. It can always be more, and I encourage all of you to, it's a great way for group chats, and as I said, Twitter's great for one-on-one, but the Facebook stuff is great for interaction between different people, offering comments back and forth and all that sort of stuff. That's what it's great for. So go and leave comments on things that I might say in the podcast, questions you might have. And if someone else has a question, throw your 2 cents worth in there as well, and let's get more of a community feel happening. Now, I am going to post the Instagram and Facebook comments for tomorrow's games tomorrow, but I'll give you a heads up of what they're going to be so you can have a think about them. The Instagram contest for tomorrow will be DeMarcus Cousins, how many combined points and rebounds? So DeMarcus Cousins points and rebounds will be Friday's Instagram contest, and Friday's Facebook contest will be John Wall, how many assists and steals combined will he have? So Instagram, Boogie, points and rebounds. Facebook, John Wall, assists and steals. That's it. Look for those posts that will go up normally about 4 or 5 hours before game time. You get in there and get yourself a... It's fun. Have a guess. Get a shout out on the podcast. It's all pretty laid back and a fun little guessing game, I think. All right, the monstrous line of the night. Who was it? Well, you might be able to tell from looking at the jersey that I'm wearing, but if you're not watching, I'm wearing a Raptors jersey. There it is. A Raptors jersey with a big number 7 on it, and that number 7 is Kyle Lowry, who put up a fantastic performance against the Trailblazers. Lowry played 40 minutes in this one, which is obviously a huge amount of playing time, but was tremendous. 30 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists, 7 triples, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and went 10 of 19 from the field. Only 3 of 5 from the free throw line. The 7 turnovers weren't ideal, but otherwise, just a fantastic line from Kyle Lowry. He has been incredible this season. He's a top 10 player in per game numbers this year. He's ranked 6th currently, averaging 21, 5, and 6. You know, almost 3 triples, over 2 steals, half a block, 42 and 86. Cooled off slightly before this game over recent times. You know, outside the top 15 in the last couple of weeks, but I don't think you've got much to panic about with Kyle Lowry. He's been incredible, and he has improved so much over the last, say, 3 seasons. When he had that massive breakout 2 years ago, there was a lot of contract year talk bandied about Lowry. He's a contract year player, he's a contract year player. Well, that obviously hasn't been the case. He has been great in the 2 seasons previous, well, not previous, after that. And you know, not quite as good last year as what he was this year, but he's still a top 30 player last year. So it wasn't like he dropped off massively. But this year, he's taken his game to a completely different level. And hey, I love me some Kyle Lowry. I think he's a very, very good player, putting in some fantastic numbers at the moment. The waiver wire line of the night is Corey Brewer of the Houston Rockets. Brewer played 25 minutes, had 24 points, hit 3 triples, had 1 assist and 4 steals, and went 9 of 12 from the field. He's been starting the last couple of weeks, and over the last 2 weeks, he's actually a top 100 player. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean he's a must-add guy. He's fine for a short-term streaming option, but all he's really offering as a positive is his steal numbers, where he's at 1.5 steals. He's also got an increased block number over that time at 0.8. That's not him. He's not a big block guy. His last 5 seasons, he's averaged 0.2, 0.4, 0.3, 0.3, 0.2. And in a couple of those seasons, he was averaging over 25 minutes a game. He's not a block guy. He is a big steals guy, so the 1.5 is pretty real that is happening in the last couple of weeks. The 1.3 a game is a little bit hesitant. I'm a little bit hesitant to think that's going to continue because he hasn't been a great three-point shooter. For now, he's playing well, but it's not something that I'm massively into. Let's go and add Corey Brewer. He's a great steal stream. That's probably about where his limit is at the moment. The next guy, though, the young gun of the night, Stan the Man Johnson. No Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and he is now going to be out until after the All-Star break. Stan the Man Johnson played 44 minutes, 22 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 1-3. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure for about the last 2 weeks I've been saying Stan Johnson's going to have a big second half of the year. Now, obviously, the opportunity opened up for him here with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's injury, and he got the playing time and put up the numbers. I've been relatively big on him for most of the season, but probably focusing more the last couple of weeks, saying that I think you want to look at him. He's a nice stash for this second half of the season as they try and maybe phase out some of Marcus Morris's minutes, maybe reduce some of Ersan Ilyasova's minutes. But Johnson had been playing up. He'd been getting 30 minutes a game over the last week or so, irrespective of Caldwell Pope's status. And he looked really good here, obviously. Caldwell Pope out until at least after the All-Star break. You're going to get some games from Johnson. I'd be adding him in all 12-team leagues and seeing how it plays out, because he looked fantastic. I know Cole McEwen's been massively high on Johnson since the draft. Yeah, calling him at times Detroit's third-best player before he even stepped onto the court. He has got a lot of upside. That's a fantastic line, obviously. Look, really, really tremendous production in many categories. His numbers on the season don't look all that impressive. And that's that's fine. He's a rookie sort of gathering himself. But once his field goal percentage is definitely rising. He's at 43% for the month, 39% on the season. His free throws are up over 80% in that time. He's hitting threes, he can get steals, he can pass, and he can handle the ball, which is a part of his game which I think is a little bit underrated. His last five games, he's averaging almost three assists a game. And that's great coming from a small forward shooting guard type player. 5.5 rebounds, 1.5 threes, a steal, 14.5 points. These are really good numbers. Johnson should be owned in basically all leagues, definitely all 12-team leagues, and we'll see what happens. I don't think that he's going to usurp Caldwell Pope's role when Caldwell Pope comes back, but you could take 2 or 3 minutes off KCP, 2 or 3 minutes off Marcus Morris, 2 minutes off Ersan Ilyasova, and get Johnson 30 minutes off the bench. He's gonna be able to produce. He is a top 100 player over the last week in 31 minutes a game, and I really do think that he is going to be a top 100 player post All-Star break. I think that he is working himself into this role post All-Star breaks when a lot of rookies really start to kick on, and I don't imagine Johnson's going to be much different. So have a look at Stanley Johnson. That answers a question that came in from Jason Gregory, who says Stanley Johnson is a pickup in all leagues. Basically, yes. It always depends on who you're dropping. But yeah, I really like what he's going to be able to do. It might only be short term. He might drop off in a 23-minute role once KCP comes back. But for now, I'm all for it. The dart of the night is Lou Williams of the Los Angeles Lakers. Not like his minutes were down. He still played 32. 8 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist on only 3 of 7 shooting. Just wasn't involved. Turned the ball over a stack of well, had 5 turnovers. His play of late has been disappointing, even though his minutes have been up, because he's been shooting only 34% across the last 2 weeks, giving you 13.7 points over a triple a game, but he doesn't do much in the other areas. I think the 0.9 blocks that he's given you over the last 2 weeks is not something that you can rely on at all. It's not, it's clearly not who he is. Now, I own him in a 10-team league, and he's almost about to get dropped, because we've heard Byron Scott telegraph the move that D'Angelo Russell's going to be starting. And if D'Angelo Russell starts over Jordan Clarkson, then Scott's got more problems than I even anticipated he had. You would think that Russell comes back into the starting lineup in place of Lou Williams. There's a chance Lou Williams gets traded, because apparently the Lakers supporters think that the best trade value on the entire team is Lou Williams, which is the most ludicrous poll I've ever seen. I retweeted that a couple of days ago, that the most trade value of any player on this team, including Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, is Lou Williams. That was a pretty weird one. Anyway, Williams, he's a borderline 12-team league holder at the moment. He only fits really certain styles and certain team builds and certain scenarios, but with his role potentially being reduced, if he loses 2 to 3 minutes, then he might lose 2 to 3 rounds of value, and that might be enough to take him out of consideration for most leagues. So Lou Williams could be on the outer. All right, let's look at the perfect DFS lineup from Thursday. Oops, that's the wrong button. Sneak peek ahead for you to have a look at the Friday's plays there. At point guard, Damian Lillard, 50.5, Kyle Lowry, 50.2. They were the two guys that I was tossing up yesterday. Yes, they're going up against each other. They're pretty close salaries. I thought they were both in a pretty good spot, and I was trying to debate which one I liked. In the end, you end up liking both, and that's the way a lot of it's going at the moment, is you're paying up for big point guards in DFS and getting cheaper options at shooting guard and at power forward. That's the way it seems to be happening. The point guards are playing consistently well, there are high prices, and they're putting up good numbers, and that's exactly what happened for Lillard and Lowry here. At shooting guard, Kobe Bryant in the perfect lineup, I think, for the third straight time that he's played, 47.5 points for Kobe, and Bryce DeJean-Jones played in place of Tyreke Evans, played huge minutes and scored 32.3. He was always going to be a great tournament punt option, not really reliable in a cash game. I own him in the 400 deep Red Rock Dynasty League. Picked him up a couple of days ago. I think that he could have season-long value. I think the Pelicans are going to sign him for the rest of the year. Now, we might be seeing Tyreke come back soon, but I do like what DeJean Jones has shown so far. And he's still only a deep league guy, but he's a name that you have to be aware of, and you have to keep sort of on the edge of your mind for if something happens to Evans and he doesn't happen to play, or he comes back and plays and he's gone again. DeJean Jones is playing quite well in that starter's role. At small forward, Melo, 43.2. Decent performance from him, and Stan Johnson had 44.3. At power forward, Anthony Davis is really, really good. 55.2. Yes, I know everyone's scared of the risk of him getting hurt, but most of the time you have to take that risk. It's not like it happens every second game or every third game or every fifth game. He's an animal. Patrick Patterson, 21.3. I said yesterday, him or Luis Scholey, you never know what to do with him. You throw one in, you see how it turns up. And look, it didn't turn up great for Patterson, but when you're paying under 4,000, that's not a bad return. And at centre, Robin Lopez, two nights in a row, big, big numbers, 48.2 for Lopez. That's probably a cue for Derek Fisher to play him 17 minutes in the next game. Just be wary, that's what Fisher likes to do. But for now, he is absolutely rolling. The total is 392.6 out of that lineup. I do apologise if there's any extraneous noise here, though. My next door neighbour has just decided to get the whippersnipper out and mow his lawn. So apologies for that. Also apologies if you don't know what a whippersnipper is. I'm not sure what it's called in the States. Maybe a weed whacker? The thing you do the edges of the garden with. Weed whacker? Someone let me know. We call it a whippersnipper. So my next door neighbor's just got the whippersnipper out. So I'm hearing it now in my head and go, can you just shut up? But hey, I'm sure he doesn't know that I'm recording a podcast talking shit about basketball. All right, now let's have a quick break so we can have a word from our sponsors. All right, we are back, and let's look at these four games from Thursday in a little bit more detail. The first game is the New York Knicks and the Detroit Pistons. I mentioned Robin Lopez, 26 and 16 for him, two assists, one block, and one steal. Huge night for Lopez. He should be owned in all leagues. Fisher's going to do some dumb shit from time to time, but Lopez has to be owned in every league. Big night from Aaron Aflalo as well, 43 minutes. He's as inconsistent, basically, as they come. Just someone watching live just tweeted at me. It was Buddha's Love Handles. Great name. Yep, Weed Whacker. Cool. So I was right. Weed Whacker equals Whippersnipper. There you go. There's your Aussie to a US slang dictionary translator. Anyway, Aaron Aflalo, 43 minutes, 24-3-3, two steals, and a three-pointer. He went 8 of 15 from the field of Aflalo. He's as inconsistent as they come. So for DFS, he is strictly a tournament play. You know my thoughts on him in standard leagues. You can add him if you want scoring, maybe, and maybe a boost in your free throw percentage, but he's so up and down that he'll have a game like this, and that's great, but then he doesn't do anything else. He's only averaging 14.3 points for the year, and that is right on average. The threes are nice from him. Everything else is subpar, with the exception of free throw percentage. I can 14-team leagues, he's a definite. 12-team leagues, really only if it suits what you need. Now, Jose Calderon returned. He played only 14 minutes in this one. He was brutal. He had three assists in those 13 minutes and went 0-3 from the field. And Langston Galloway got all the point guard minutes. 36 minutes for Galloway, 17-5-2, two triples and a steal. He's also red hot, going 7-9 from the field. Is this a changing of the guard? Maybe. I'm okay grabbing Galloway and seeing how it plays out. If you own Calderon, I would also just wait and see how it plays out. If you want to make a direct switch of Calderon for Galloway, I understand that as well. It's not like Calderon's going to be this great player on your team. So, you know, maybe getting Galloway, who could potentially be a top 75 guy, is worth looking at. So, obviously, Fisher's run that here, and he's run Galloway out there. Or it could be the fact that the Calderon was coming back from a groin injury, and maybe he was a little underdone, and he wasn't quite ready to go out and play his full allotment of minutes. Regardless, it's a situation to watch pretty closely, especially the next game, to see what they do. But if you want to get a leg up on your competition, Galloway's worth a look. You might have already owned him just for that short-term run when Calderon was out. Carmelo, 19-11-8 with a steal and a three. He was terrible shooting the ball, 4 of 18 and went 10 of 14 from the free throw line. But the assist numbers you're getting from Melo at the moment are really impressive for a guy who's distinguished himself over his career as a ball hog, as a ball stopper, as a black hole. He's averaging 5.5 assists over the last month, 4.2 on the season, a consistent last 2 months, 5 assists. That's a lot of assists. That's massive positive value from assists. He's been somewhat of a disappointment this year, but he's still a top 40 player. I grabbed him in the second round of maybe one or two drafts. Hasn't quite lived up to where I wanted him to be there because his scoring is way down. I was adding him, hoping I could get a guy who was a 24-point scorer, maybe a 25-point scorer. He's only at 21, but the assist numbers are definitely a surprise to me. Really, really helping me out in that area. And I'd still like what he can do. Like 21 points is nothing to sneeze at. 21-8-4 on the year with a steal and 1.3 triples. There's some pretty good numbers for Melo. So he's currently ranked inside the top 40. Lance Thomas played 31 minutes. He's a deeper league only sort of player. And what about our boy?
Percentages.
He only played 24 minutes, 5 points, 4 rebounds, a 3, 2 and 9. He's really struggling at the moment. This is a great buy low opportunity on Kristaps. If you can go and get a real buy low offer and get it accepted, do it. He's a guy that can put up, you know, obviously big numbers. He's hit these sort of mini walls about 3 or 4 times this year. I don't believe in the rookie wall phenomenon necessarily, because majority of the, it's like a contract year phenomenon. If a rookie slows down at the end of the year, it's, oh, rookie wall, rookie wall. It's like if a player plays well in the last year of his contract, you go, oh, it's a contract year. But if a player is shithouse in the last year of their contract, Roy Hibbert, Robin Lopez last year, Aaron Aflalo last year, Rajon Rondo last year, it gets ignored. Or if a rookie who surges at the end of the season, what do? They just straddled the rookie wall and didn't worry them. It's very sort of narrative-based and narrative-driven that, oh, this guy's hit a rookie wall, he got slow, but then there's 5 other rookies who got better. So Stanley Johnson getting better now, does that mean that the rookie wall doesn't exist? Does Karl Anthony Towns getting immensely better now, what does that mean for the rookie wall? It's all just, I don't know. A lot of this stuff is a load of shit. It's just put out there as an easy crutch to explain things. When, yeah, he might be getting tired, but rookie wall doesn't, you can't go, this guy's a rookie, he's going to hit a rookie wall. Because I reckon, and I will do this over the offseason, look at all the rookies and look at their rankings per month. I reckon we're going to see, and I might do this for the last couple of years, I reckon we're going to see that most of them get better as the season wears on. The same thing when you look at contract year players. Most of them, look, some guys play better. Yeah, 45% of them don't. It's, can't think of the right way to describe it, but I think you get my point. Just don't buy into it or everything you hear in that regard. Derek Williams was down to 6 minutes, so his little run of form is done. He's still a guy I'd hold in deeper leagues, because I don't think 6 minutes is the allocation he's going to get most of the time, but obviously not as that 25-minute run. Ersan Ilyasova, another 31 minutes, 12-5 with 2 triples. I like him still in 12-team leagues. And Marcus Morris, 13-4-4. He played 39 minutes. He got that extra run with those guys with Caldwell Pope out. He got a bit of extra run because Johnson played more of the two. It obviously didn't help Brandon Jennings. He only played 16 minutes, 11-3-2 with a triple. There are people still holding Brandon Jennings, thinking he's going to get traded to another team and become this fantasy savior. Again, I don't want to go on too much of a Brandon Jennings rant, but A, the Pistons don't want to trade him, and B, even if he goes to another team, he's, yeah, a month back from Achilles surgery. How good's Wes Matthews look this year? The answer is not very. I don't think we're going to see how good's Anderson Varejao looked coming back from his Achilles surgery. Terrible would be the answer. Jennings has looked okay, but I really don't see him getting traded and becoming a fantasy star. So, look, there's a week to go to the trade deadline, a week and a bit to go. If you believe it, stick to your guns, go for it. But I wouldn't have picked up Jennings, I wouldn't have held him anywhere, and he's been, yeah, average. Reggie Jackson, 21 points with 5 assists, 3 triples and 2 steals, so a good night there, a poor percentage night. And Andre Drummond, speaking of poor percentage, 3 of 9 from the free throw line, as we mentioned, he missed 6. 17 and 13 in 32 minutes with a steal and a block, so a pretty solid Andre Drummond night. And with KCP out, Darren Hilliard got some extra burn, 15 minutes for him, 6 points and a rebound, clearly only a deeper league. I don't mind him, though, for massively deep dynasty leagues. I think he's got a little bit of appeal, but I don't think he's ever got top 150 appeal. He might be a top 200 appeal guy in, you know, 3 or 4 years. But I do think that he can develop his game and become a pretty useful NBA backup player. The next game, the Houston Rockets and the Phoenix Suns. I thought James Harden had a great matchup. I still do. He had an awesome matchup. He was just really bad. 4 of 19. That kills you. 7 of 7 from the free throw line was decent. 17, 9 and 6, 2 threes and 2 steals. So it's not a complete write-off of a night. But you would have hoped that Jim would have gone for, say, 35, you know, 10 with a 35-point triple-double. But still 17, 9 and 6, 2 steals and 2 threes. Not too bad. While Trevor Reeves at 22 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, added 4 steals and 3 threes. He is on a red-hot streak at the moment. Maybe it's a sell-high time, but he's a very underrated fantasy player because a lot of his value comes from the low volume stats. So you look at it and go, he's averaging 9 points. This is bullshit. What's he doing? But he helps out in so many other areas that he's still a mid-round player, even when it seems like he's struggling. Pat Beverley played 26 minutes, 6-5-6 with 2 steals, a block and a 3, really contributing in lots of categories there. Obviously, he's never going to really be a big scoring help guy, but a decent rebounder, threes and steals, and when he adds in 6 assists, it's a bonus. Dwight Howard only had 5 points in this game. That's not ideal, but 16 boards, 2 steals and a block is decent production, while Ty Lawson actually got busy, 12-2-4, and added 4 triples, but he can be left alone outside of our deep leagues. Josh Smith filled the box score, 6-3-3 with a 1-1. That's not great value, though. He's still really borderline 12-team league for me, while Terrence Jones was out with that car accident issue, and Clint Capella played 15, and he went 10-4 with 2 blocks. You can leave Capella alone in standard leagues as well. On to the Phoenix Suns, their second game under Earl Watson, they lost, but I think we're getting a fair idea of what the rotation's going to be. PJ Tucker played 31 minutes, 13-9-2, 5 steals and 2 threes. Must be owned. Has to be owned in 12-team leagues. Archie Goodwin, 22.7 assists, 2 triples, 38 minutes. Has to be owned. He might not last because Brandon Knight looks like he will come back, but Goodwin has to be owned. Devin Booker, 17-3-4 with 2 triples. He was 9 of 10 from the free throw line. Not a great shooting night, going 3 of 12. He has to be owned. Markieff Morris, 14-5-2, a 3 and a block in 29 minutes. He has to be owned. Tyson Chandler, 4 points, 10 rebounds in 21 minutes. This was the interesting one. What happens with the centers? Well, Chandler played 21, Len played 27. I think Len should be probably owned now, because we didn't really see it in the last game. There was foul trouble for both guys. But in this one, Len still had foul trouble, played 27 minutes, went 12-18 with a steal and 2 assists. He's clearly more of the future of this team than what Chandler is. I think he's a better player than Chandler. I think you can do a stack for this team. He might not work out. Look, Tucker, Booker, Morris are going to have better or more reliable value, I think. But Len has probably the most upside out of all of them. I think he's got the highest ceiling out of all those players. I'd be looking to add him if I've got the roster spot. Definitely adding him over Tyson Chandler. Jordy McRae played 15 minutes, 8-2 with a 3 and a steal. Had one big game when he burst onto the scene in his first game. Hasn't really produced much since then. Really a really deep league sort of player. While Mirza Teletovic added 3 triples in his 19 minutes, totaling 15 points. John Lua did not play in this one because he's a DNP CD. And this is what I respect Earl Watson, because John Lua is not a good player. And if he's not good, don't play him. I don't like the fact that Sonny Williams played 18 minutes. And interesting to see what they do when Ronnie Price comes back, another guy that I'm a huge fan of. But if Lua's not one of your best players, play Morris, play Teletovic, play some Tucker at the 4, you're done. Why do you need to include these players who aren't good and who really probably aren't going to be part of the future of this team? You get the guys in there who very well might be. The next game, the Los Angeles Lakers and the New Orleans Pelicans, the Lakers doing their best to give up their pick to the Philadelphia 76ers. The Kobe farewell tour. He is on absolute fire at the moment, and maybe his lasting legacy to the Lakers is losing that top 3 protected pick. 27-12 for Kobe, 4 triples, 2 assists, and 2 steals. Must be owned, especially if you're punting field goal percentage. He has to be owned. These are big, big numbers from Kobe. They'll drop off. He'll play less minutes, but for now, Byron Scott's going hard on him. Bryant's going hard on himself, and the numbers are crazy good. It's clearly just a glorified ego trip for him this season. We know that the long-term damage could be a real issue on this team, but for now, we're talking here and now fantasy-wise. Own him. Jordy Clarkson with a decent night, 18-5-2 with a couple of triples, and D'Angelo Russell, 13-3-3 in 29 minutes. He will get better. He will have a better second half of the season, Russell, as long as Byron Scott doesn't do anything more idiotic. Julius Randle, he's getting 30-plus minutes every night, 11-8 with 3 assists. He should be owned as well, but you know that his upside isn't massive, while Nick Young had 11-4 with a triple. Brandon Bass, not a great night. 5-5 in 25 minutes. He had a real good stretch. He was putting up nice numbers. That's come to an end. On to the Pelicans. Anthony Davis, 39-11, 1 steal and a block, and then he went 16-25 from the field, and a disappointing 7-12 from the free throw line, but still a big night from Anthony Davis. As I mentioned before, when he's playing, you're going to get pretty good numbers from him. For as disappointing as he has been this season, and I say disappointing in a very, facetious way maybe, he's still a top 5 player. in fantasy, averaging 23.5, 10.5, half a three, two assists, 1.5 steals, 2.5 blocks, and he's second in the NBA in block shots, averaging and shooting 49 and 76. These are really good numbers. They're not quite at the level that he was last year, but they're still pretty bloody good. I know he misses games, but he's played more games than what he would have last season. He's at 43 games played on the season, and there's always these little annoying things, I know. But really, his numbers have been solid once again. Jrue Holiday, 19 points in 34 minutes, 9 assists, a steal and a block. Big night from Jrue. If we're talking New Orleans point guards, we have to go to my boy Norris Cole. How did he do? He played 13 minutes, and he scored 2 points, and had 2 assists and 2 steals, and went 1 of 10 from the field. That is the Norris Cole that I know and love. Yes, he probably still has to be owned, but I can't stress enough that he's just not good. He's just not a good player. For as good as he's been, and you can't see me because I'm off the screen, but I'm using some very Dr. Evil air quotes here. For as good as he's been the last 2 weeks, he's ranked 160th. He scores 12.7 points below average. He gets you assists. Yeah, they're nice. The 5.6 assists is nice. 0.9 steals is not great. Shithouse percentages over the last 2 weeks, 41 and 50. And subpar rebounds, okay threes. He's just really bad at basketball. Like, really bad. Anyway, if he's going to get 30 minutes, though, you do like what he can accumulate. But Holiday and Dejon Jones looked really good here together. They played well. It's not going to keep Cole at 13 minutes a night. But it's a risk with owning someone who's legit not good, and it's just their opportunity. Eventually, they're going to show out. It's going to show them up. Same thing happens to Terrence Jones this season. The opportunity was great, but he's just not good, and it proves it. And I think you're seeing a similar thing happen with a guy like Will Barton and Kent Bazemore. Will Barton in the slam dunk competition, by the way, so that's going to be interesting. That's slam, not going to go through all the all-star participants for all the contests, but I think we're going to see some interesting ones, especially the skills challenge with all the big guys competing. That's going to be real fun. Ryan Anderson, 17 and 4 with 2 triples. Yeah, that's an okay night there. Omer Asik did not attempt a single shot in 15 minutes. Still had 8 rebounds, and that's really his only strength. And Alonzo G, only 16 minutes in the start, gave Dante Cunningham 32 minutes off the bench. But both of those guys combined give you about a quarter of a normal player. Combined, those two guys played 48 minutes. So they played every single minute at small forward, basically. 1 point, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 1 block. They took 1 shot combined. So the small forward position took 1 shot combined for this team. And they had 2 free throws and hit one of them. It's just really bad. Just don't play these guys. I'd rather put Norris Cole at small forward than one of these guys. Dante Cunningham and G have got some decent defense. But when you're losing to the Lakers, is that really good? I don't care if they've got good defense if you can't even beat the Lakers with enough offense. It is not a good spot. The Toronto Raptors and the Portland Trailblazers. Patrick Patterson, 28 minutes, 6-4 and 3, 3 steals and 2 triples. So a decent night there, but it's not enough for us in our standard sort of formats. And Luis Scola had 6-5 and 3 in his 22 minutes. Both of those guys should be restricted to 14-team leagues only. Jonas Valanciunas back at least above 19 minutes, 25 here, 14 and 11 with a couple of blocks. And that meant Bismack Biyombo went back down to 21 minutes, and he had a very Omer Asik-like line, 1 point, 7 rebounds, and a block shot. While Terrence Ross got 30 minutes with the absence of James Johnson, 12 points and 3 rebounds. But the important thing is to note that he's the one who's getting the more of the minutes, slightly more than Corey Joseph, who played 26 and went 12, 3 and 3. Ross is the guy that I would want to own out of those two, but it's not a must-own situation. Normie Powell, he got another start. Didn't do a huge amount, 1 rebound and 1 assist in his 13 minutes. The Portland Trailblazers, Dame Lillard, 27, 5, and 11, 2 triples, 1 steal, 1 block. He's pretty good. Yep. CJ McCollum, 21, 6, and 2 with 4 triples and a steal. Not a bad night from him. And Alan Crabb got relatively hot, going 5 of 9, hitting all 6 free throws. 17 points with 2 steals and a 3 in 34 minutes. The Blazers decided that, okay, Noah Vonleh's out. That's our 14-minute starter. Let's put someone else in who's not in the rotation so they can get their 14 to 16 minutes. Mo Harkless, who'd been completely out of the rotation, came in, started, played that ridiculous 16-minute role, had 2 points with 2 blocks and a steal. I really like Mo Harkless, but I don't like that sort of a rotational role. Mason Plumlee, Only 20 minutes. He had four fouls, so he was a bit limited there. 6-4 with a couple of blocks. He's still a guy that I hold on to. Same with Al-Farouq Aminu at the moment, who was 7-4 with a triple in 32 minutes. But his previous games had been pretty impressive. Gerald Henderson continues to get low 20s in minutes. 24 here, 10-5-3, a triple one, which is very much unlike him. He's a 14-team league sort of guy who can be... He's not a bad player to watch because he's super athletic. His defense is decent. He can't hit threes. I don't know. He's not a good fantasy guy. He's a 14-team league specialist. Myers Leonard, 24 minutes, 9-5-3. I thought he'd get a big bump with Vonleh out. Basically, no. He's doing exactly what he was doing before. When that those extra minutes went to a guy out of the rotation, in that being Harkless. All right, that is it for that part of the podcast, the box score breakdown. What I'm going to do now is, before we head into the break and talk DFS, I'm going to do the two-week reviews where we look at the top players over the last 2 weeks. That should be pretty self-explanatory. I didn't do it last week, I don't think, so I do apologize about that, but we're going to do it now, give you an idea of recent value and role of guys. Let's have a look at the top 20 players over the last 2 weeks for head-to-head value. Number one, Steph Curry, of course. Number two, Jim Harden. Number three, he only played one game. Hassan Whiteside, he went 10-9 with 5 blocks, and that's obviously a bit skewed for that small sample size, but he's been close to a top 10 guy for head-to-head formats for most of the year. KD at number four, Draymond Green at number five, Russ Westbrook at number six, Klay Thompson at number seven, who's averaging 27 points with over 4 triples, and actually not even blocking shots, which is something he had been doing, but he hasn't missed a free throw in the last 2 weeks, and he's hit 55% of his shots. He's been really, really good. Karl-Anthony Towns comes in at number 8, Boogie Cousins at number 9, Chris Paul at 10. The next one, number 11, is a little bit surprising.
My name is Jeff.
Jeff Green, the 11th-ranked player over the last 2 weeks. Has to be owned. Also have to realize that it is not going to last. Anthony Davis is at 12, Kemba Walker is at 13, LeBron James is at 14. LaMarcus Aldridge is at 15, having a really, really good stretch here, averaging 29 points on 59% shooting. Not doing much else, though. So if that shooting goes back to his usual 47-48%, he's going to drop back down. Great sell high moment if someone believes in LaMarcus Aldridge continuing this sort of form. Brook Lopez is at 16. DeAndre Jordan's at 17. Johnny Wall's at 18. Kyle Lowry's at 19. And Pau Gasol is at 20. So they're the top 20 players over the last 2 weeks for head-to-head value. Let's look at the top rookies, the top 5 rookies over that time. Karl Towns at 8, clearly. Nikola Jokic at 30. Miles Turner at 57. Obviously, both those guys need to be owned. Devin Booker at 79. And Justice Winslow at number 80 over the last 2 weeks. I do own Justice Winslow in the Red Rock Roto League, which I think is about 160 players deep. He's sitting on my bench at the moment, just waiting to see what's going to happen. He's worth a look definitely in a 14-team league, and not a bad 12-team league guy, because his value is increasing. Now, with the Heat guys getting healthier, he might have a bit of a drop-off when Whiteside goes back and plays 28 minutes, but for now, he's starting to look a bit better. The top 5 sophomores over the last 2 weeks. Nerlens Noel, 22. Gary Harris, 45. Did not expect Gary Harris to be that high. I've said it over the last couple of weeks on the podcast. I expect him to be a top 100 post-All-Star break guy. Well, he's a top 50 guy already. He has to be owned. Same with that, Zach LaVine at 46, Marcus Smart at 56, and Rod Hood at 72. So the second-year players really starting to come on at the moment. What I'd also thought I'd do is highlight a couple of interesting players, or guys that I found interesting inside this top 100. Jeff Teague is currently ranked 24th over the last couple of weeks, a big improvement from what he was doing early when he was like outside the top 100. This is back to sort of where we valued him in draft, so good to see him bouncing back. Vic Oladipo at 32. Hopefully this is where he can stay. Back in the starting lineup, back with a pretty solid role. I just wanted to highlight him because we get disappointed of the way that Scott Skiles uses him, but he's still putting up these sort of numbers. It's going to fluctuate a bit. There'll be a big game, there'll be a shit game, but hopefully we get more big games from him. Kobe's at 35 in head-to-head leagues, and if you don't need any... Look, he's averaging in his last 2 weeks 18.8, 3 triples, 5.5 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.3 steals. And still only it's on 41% and 89 from the line. So Kobe in a really, really hot streak at the moment, has to be owned. I know that there's a chance that he misses games, but whatever, he has to be owned. At 42, Jim Butler. Wanted to highlight Butler here because a couple of things about him. He's averaging almost 23 points in the last 2 weeks. But just, I don't know, just he's got decent numbers, but they're just, they're not fantastic. But the main point I wanted to highlight with Jimmy Butler is, and it was something that was brought up on the Basketball Monster forums today, that about Jimmy Butler being an Iron Man. And Jimmy Butler's going to play through pain. And I've had it in plenty of other times with trades. I want to trade away someone because he's an injury risk to get back Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler's an injury risk. Jimmy Butler's played one full season in his career. And the other seasons he played less than 70 games, I think 65, 66. And then he played 42 in the lockout season. So he misses almost 20 games a season, apart from the one where he played 82, which was his second year. And now he's got this knee problem, and the quotes coming out about it, they don't sound ideal. He's like, oh, I just want it. Look, it was a bit sore. I want to take my time. I want to be really careful with it. I think we could be seeing a couple more missed games here from Butler. He is not a man of steel. He is not an Iron Man. He's an Iron Man because he plays 39 minutes a game, but he gets injured every year and for long periods of time. And that's, it is a concern. He hasn't been injured this year. He's injured now. The quotes don't sound positive coming from him. He might only miss two or three, but you don't want to hear a guy that's on your team come out and say the things as he said. Now, I want to bring up these quotes so I don't get it wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering. Let's have a look if I can find those Jim Butler quotes. But the thought of him being an Iron Man along the lines of a Damian Lillard, and we know how that turned out this year, and it's part of why the thought process in the preseason of like, I'm going to get Damian Lillard because he never misses a game, it's flawed because it can happen. You know, DeAndre Jordan, I'm going to get him. He never misses a game. Well, he's missed two this year already. Obviously, not a big concern with him, but it happens. Okay, here's the Jimmy Butler quote. It's disappointing, but I've got to think big picture. I've got to take care of my body. My trainer was here and he was like, look, you've got to do what's right for your body. So I talked to the coaches and we thought it was best I didn't play Wednesday in Sacramento. He did feel better on Thursday morning and he'll test his knee during shoot around on Friday morning. It's just, I don't know. Just something about that worries me. The fact that it came out of nowhere, the injury, which I talked about on yesterday's podcast, it just, I don't know, it was just a bit weird. All that stuff that was coming up. I don't know. He did get a knock on the knee. It's obviously not, it doesn't look like it's anything serious. We're not talking about, you know, MRIs or surgery or anything like that. But just a point I wanted to highlight, that he's not necessarily an Iron Man. He has missed plenty of games. Danny Green is the 51st ranked player over the last 2 weeks. He should be owned. He's averaging 3 triples a game, a block, 1.3 steals, 5 rebounds. Has to be owned. Yes, he's had a terrible start to the season, but this is what he does. He only averages 10 points, but 3 triples, 5 rebounds, 1.3 steals, 1 block, 47% is shooting. He has to be owned. Enes Kanter's at 71st over the last 2 weeks, averaging 14 and 8 in just 22 minutes. Part of the allure of him is that he can put up these big points and rebounds games, but then he can also fall in a hole and do not much. For now, he's worth a look if you've got an open roster spot. Mike Conley comes in ranked 77th. He hasn't been able to get his minutes up. I think he's only played over 30 minutes once since coming back. He's had a ridiculously efficient run. I'd be buying really low on Mike Conley if I can. If you look at his minutes and they look a little underwhelming, 10 points a game in the last 2 weeks, half a three, 35% shooting, like that's not good. But you bring the 35 up to 44, 45, and he averages 17 points a game, 16, 15 points a game, with 8 assists, 4.5 rebounds, 1.2 steals, and 86 from the line, you're talking top 30. Buy low on Mike Conley. At 85 and 86, Julius Randle and Jabari Parker, worth mentioning those guys, second-year players, they should be owned. And Paul Millsap is also in a slump. He is ranked 88th, averaging only 28 minutes over the last couple of weeks, 12.5 points. This is a great buy-low opportunity on Paul Millsap, if you can. And Jay Crowder is also in a bit of a slump, 97th. He's a guy that I never thought was a good player, didn't think he was a good player last year at all. Struggled with him at the start of the year, but he has started to play, well, he did start off the season fantastically, but has dropped off significantly over this last week. He is dealing with some injuries, so maybe that's the reason. I would bank on him bouncing back a bit from here. He's not a guy that I think is a Will Barton, Kent Bazemore sort of guy that a slump means that's who he is. I think he has improved his game quite a bit. I'd be looking to buy low if I possibly could. All right, that is a... Oh no, one more thing we've got to go with the... what's it called? With the weekly review. There's the guys in the top 100 who have less than 50% ownership. Gary Harris. Evan Turner, who ranks 50th. He should be probably owned. Wes Johnson at 55 suits a specific team, but he's going to have a pretty consistent role with Blake Griffin out. I like him. Jordy Hill at 67 wasn't good in the last one. Had been fantastic with Jan Mahinmi out. Really a short-term guy. PJ Tucker is less than 50% owned. Don't understand this. He's ranked 73rd. He should be owned. Justice Winslow at 80. We talked about him. Courtney Lee at 81. I don't buy that. Amari Stoudemire at 82. Do not buy that with Whiteside coming back. Pat Bev at 83. Can't believe he's still less than 50% owned. He has to be owned. Sean Livingston at 87. I wouldn't be taking Livingston. He's a deeper league sort of player. Archie Goodwin, 89. Until Brandon Knight comes back, he's going to be there. Trevor Booker at 94. He's had a couple of big games, but again, this is not sustainable production. Jeremy Lin at 95. Interesting to see what they do when everyone gets healthy on this team. He could be a drop candidate. I'm not necessarily dropping him just yet. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is ranked at 98th over the last couple of weeks, and he is less than 50% owned. He's a guy that if you're looking for some rebounding numbers and hopefully a decent field goal percentage, Kidd-Gilchrist is worth a look. Now, he's not going to blow up and start scoring big numbers and putting up these crazy box score numbers, but he can be a top 100 guy. As we've seen already, I like the addition of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. All right, now we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk some DFS.
This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky run on the road. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
Was an abrupt end. I pushed the wrong button. Sorry about that. That terrible fading of music. I wouldn't get a job as a DJ anyway. Yeah, that was really bad. I'm embarrassed about that. Let's get into DFS though. That was terrible. I'm not gonna recover from that. And that's the problem with it's not a problem because I do like doing the live videos, but I can't fix it. It was live. It's done. Anyway, DFS first game: Indiana Pacers, Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 4.5. The total is 205 points. No real injuries to worry about here. I already mentioned that Jan Mahinmi is out for the Pacers, so that's opening that opportunity up for Jordan Hill and some more touches for Miles Turner, perhaps, or at least more minutes for Miles Turner. Hill disappointed us in the last game. He only played 19 minutes and put up 14 points, but previous to that, he'd been putting up big numbers. He's had a 44-point game in the last five. I reckon his ownership will be a little bit down. The Hawks is not a tough front court to match up against, so I would be I'd be all for looking at using Jordan Hill at that price tag of 4,600. Miles Turner at 5,600 is still appealing. The salary is obviously $1,000 higher. I think that the Turner probably has a marginally higher upside. He's definitely got a higher floor because I think they'll play him no matter what. But both of those guys are in play against the Hawks. And George Hill is priced at 5,900. He's just, I don't know, he's okay. That's not a bad price. It's not a bad matchup. He's sort of a guy that if he gets 5x, you'd be happy, but you're gonna be pretty confident he's going to get you sort of 4.5x, which is okay. Not a bad cash game point guard. Paulie George, 8,300. The salary has dropped significantly. He's averaging 33 across the last five, and he has had a 52-point game in that, but he is a little, well, he's not a little, he's a lot, you know, inconsistent. He fluctuates wildly. His last five games, he's got a min-max of 19 and then 52. It's a big difference. Yeah, I prefer him in a tournament setting. Really not a horrible cash game play, but there's another small forward if we're spending up that I would rather use, and that is obviously LeBron when we get to that game later on. On the Hawks side of things, Kent Bazemore has really been underwhelming lately. He's only averaging 19 points across the last five. Yes, he's at less than 5,000, and I don't mind throwing that into a tournament, but his highest score over the last five has been 21.8. That's not big. He has been really, really struggling. Thabo Sefolosha is eating into his minutes somewhat as well. Not all that keen on using Bazemore. Plus, he's going to have to match up against Paul George, which is not an ideal scenario for him. Paul Millsap, this is not a great matchup. The Pacers do restrict big men pretty well. His form has been way down. He's under 8,000 for his salary, so that's becoming nice. I don't mind it as a contrarian tournament play because sometimes you've got to do that. I don't imagine Millsap's ownership's going to be very high. But he's not a guy that I'm looking at in cash games, nor is Al Horford, who's priced at $7,000. His production hasn't been giving you $7,000 worth lately. Jeff Teague's at 61. He is definitely in play here. He's been solid lately, averaging 30 across the last five. He's had a 50-point game, and his worst game in the last five has only been 21, so it hasn't been terrible. At 6,100, he feels relatively solid. There is always a bit of a risk, but I feel the risk of him having a dud has been minimized as of late. Monte Ellis at 6,800, really good matchup, and he's had some big numbers lately, averaging 33 across the last three games, but 6,800 feels like it's just a little bit high. I don't completely dislike using him, but I'm not in love with it. Mike Muscala is an interesting one. He's at 3,500. He played 20 minutes in the last game with Thiago Splitter out, but it was against the Sixers, so I'm not... Minimum salary, maybe a tournament, but I probably still don't think there's much to really love there. And Tim Hardaway, who put up 29 in the last one at 3,800, again, that was a blowout factor sort of performance. What do we do with CJ Miles, who's priced at 3,800? He dropped 31 in the last game, but had been putrid before that. He's a tournament-only sort of option. I don't imagine he gets as red-hot as what he did in that game, and that's going to limit his output. Kyle Korver, 3,800. Not a good matchup for him either. He's really only restricted to tournaments. That's the only way that you can use him. You can't look at him in a cash game. Washington versus Philadelphia. The Wizards are favored by 9. The total is a pretty big one in this one. It is 215 points. Chris Humphries is questionable, but he was unlikely to see the court anyway. Bob Cubb at 5,000 has been a little bit quiet his last couple. The matchup is not perfect. It's not terrible. At 5,000, I still think that he has tremendous value. I think 25, 26 points is definitely within his range. He's averaging 26 across the last five, just been a little down the last couple. I expect a bounce back from Bob Cove here. And his opposite number, Otto Porter, the small forward from the Wizards, he's at 5,300. He got back to 32 minutes in the last game. This is a super matchup for him. I think that his ownership will be relatively low, and 26, 30 points. Like, he's able to put up some big numbers earlier on a couple of weeks ago. I think that he is definitely in play here. Look at a couple of his teammates. Marcin Gortat at 6,700. Big men have been thriving recently against Philadelphia. It's all a matter of how many minutes does he stay on the court. And at 6,700, you're going to need him to get close to 30 minutes, I would have thought. Can he get you 28 points? Maybe, but it's not going to be enough. He needs to go for 32, 33. And his highest score in the last five is just 33. It is an appealing matchup. And I think he's a relatively safe play. But I'm not sure his upside is massive. Now, Ish Smith is at 6,700. Not a good matchup for him going up against John Wall. That price is a little bit scary. Just feels a bit too high for me. Any other Sixers guys? Nerlens Noel is at 6,800. He's basically giving you 30 points a night, but that's not enough at 6,800. And Jahlil Okafor is at 6,200. Hasn't been approaching that at all, averaging only 24 across the last five. So we'll leave those guys out of it. Isaiah Cannon at 3,700, throw him into a tournament. He can get hot and he can give you 30 points. That's about where he rests. On the Wizards side of things, Brad Beal at 5,900. Some decent games recently, a 28 in the last game. A positive matchup, but given his minute situation and given playing the Sixers, maybe they'd knock a couple off what he's able to do here. And I'm not sure I want to spend 5,900. I am okay with spending 9,900 on John Wall, though. That's almost 10,000. Yes, He put up 60 or over 60 against the Warriors in the last game. He's got a 47 average across the last five. I'm pretty confident that we can get 45 points out of John Wall. And at 9,900, that's basically where you need to be. You've got a pretty solid floor. Not really thinking Ish Smith's going to do too much to stop him. He is this team, and I think that Wall can be able to put up a pretty big number. I don't think the Sixers are going to let this game get to a 40-point blowout. The Wizards just aren't that good. The Wizards' defense also isn't that good. So I think we have a closer game here. And I don't think that means that Wall, you know, gets limited to 27 minutes or anything along those lines. Garrett Temple, if he was at 3,800, I'd be okay because you know you get 20 points out of him and you'd be, you know, relatively happy using him. But at 4,600, he just doesn't do enough to interest me. The power forward spot, the Wizards, Jared Dudley and Nene, definitely no consistent value from those players. Dudley is averaging 23 across the last three, and at 4,600, I just don't trust it enough. And yeah, I don't think there's much else to really look at with this game. The Miami Heat and the Charlotte Hornets is up next. There is no spread for this one because we do not know if Kemba Walker is playing. He is probable and he practiced, so he should be right to go. And that's going to mean, you know, the rotations for the Hornets are going to be really interesting to see. What happens with MKG, Jeremy Lin? You imagine that Jeremy Lamb loses out completely. We don't see much more. Troy Daniels, Brian Roberts is out of the rotation, and they run a MKG, Lin, Walker, Batum, and even some reduced PJ Harrison across the 1, 2, and 3. Maybe even Marvin Williams moving to the 3 for a little bit. Interesting to see what they do. Nick Batum's salary looks so appealing as it's 6,000, but he hasn't hit that mark in the last 5. He hasn't gotten 5x in the last 5, but he was obviously awesome to start the season. He's an okay guy to have a look at in a tournament at that price. It's a really nice price for him. 30 points is all he needs, and I think that he's got a decent shot of getting it. His teammate, Cody Zeller, is at 4,600, played 28 minutes in his first game back. Didn't wow us, only put up, or not even 20 points. But at 4,600, can he go for 25? I think that he's got a pretty decent chance of it. I like the role that they gave him in his first game back, so I think that he has got some appeal. Any other Hornets guys? Kemba Walker, one game back from a knee injury, 8,400. No thanks, not against the Heat. He'll probably go out and drop 75, but this is not a spot that I want to go and use him. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is at 5,800. He's been superb so far, averaging almost 29 since coming back, but averaging 29 at 5,800, that's sort of right where he needs to be. I reckon he's a pretty solid cash game play and not a big upside tournament guy, but you can definitely use him in DFS. On the Heat side of things, Goran Dragic at 5,400 is appealing to me in this one. He's been a little bit below par, but at 5,400, he doesn't really need to do much. He can put up a pretty bit decent night against a team in the Hornets who has been allowing some fantasy points as of late. Gerald Green is just $100 above minimum. He's at 3,600. Doesn't mean I want to use him, though. But Luol Deng is interesting. 5,000. He's been putting up some nice numbers now. Now, with Hassan Whiteside returning, it may be into a full role pretty soon. I don't really see the upside with Deng, but he can be a guy at 5,000 you can fill out a cash game roster with and be confident you can get 23 to 27 points, that sort of range. That's sort of where he sits to me. Chris Bosh at 7,400 hasn't been playing all that well lately. Yeah, 30 average across the last five is okay, and he's been rock solid with his consistency, but just the upside for him hasn't been great, not really reaching that 5x threshold very often at all. Whiteside scored 33 points in 17 minutes in the last game. He's at 7,900, so that is a big whack of salary. Do you think he's going to go back to 28 minutes? I'm not so sure. So I would probably be hesitant to use him, except in a tournament. And Dwayne Wade at 7,800, he is really appealing here. This is a nice matchup for Wade. He's been super good lately, averaging almost 40 points across his last five. His lowest score in his last five has been 28, and he did have a 51-point game in that time as well. I like Dwayne Wade at 7,800 if you want to spend up on a shooting guard. Justice Winslow, yeah, great matchup. Just not sure at 4,200 he's going to be able to. I'm not all that confident he's going to go for 23 or 24 points. Not happy with that. Marvin Williams at 5,700. Terrible matchup. Jeremy Lin, same situation. Not a good matchup. 5,300 for him. And we don't know how the return of Kemba Walker is going to affect both these guys when they're going to finally have basically everyone healthy apart from Al Jefferson. At least all their wing players healthy with Walker, Kidd-Gilchrist, Batum, Lin, who's been injured, Jeremy Lamb there. All those guys playing. This could also mean the end of PJ Hairston out of the rotation altogether, which I reckon is what they'll do, and they can play Batum, Kid Gilchrist and Walker as the starting 1, 2 and 3 in no particular order, and then use Lynn off the bench and play some... who's the other guy that I'm trying to think of? Play a little bit of Hairston off the bench as well. And with Lynn playing some backup 1 and 2. And maybe, look, Lynn might even get 30 minutes playing backup 1 and 2. You're getting at least 27 minutes. So it might not be completely the end of Jeremy Lynn for your standard leagues anyway. The Los Angeles Clippers and the Orlando Magic. The Magic are favored by 4.5 points. The total here is 205. Not a bad sort of total. Injury-wise, nothing we really need to check on for this game. We know who's in, we know who's out. Aaron Gordon at 5,000 was terrible in the last game, but still got decent run, considering he shot so poorly. He's at 5,000. Do you expect him to get 25 points? Yes, I expect him to exceed that. I think the people are very reactionary. There's a lot of recency bias, so I think that his ownership will drop because of what happened with him in the last game. So at 5,000, I reckon he's as good a bet as any. Next to him, Nick Vucevic at 7,900, one of the better high-priced centers on the board. I feel really confident with using Vucevic most nights, unless Skiles does some Skilesy things. If the Clippers blow him out, Vucevic is going to get limited. We know that's going to happen. He also had a really interesting game in the last one, only 26 points in 36 minutes. It's because he didn't grab any rebounds, which was really weird, but normally he's a double-double every night, increasing his shot blocking. I like him to bounce back in this one. Now, Lord Alfred Payton's at 5,500. Not putting any trust in him, especially against Chris Paul and the Clippers. While Vic Oladipo is at 6,600, that's the salary's up there. So we're talking about a guy that needs to get close to 35. He did have 55 in the last one. Don't really think that's going to be something we can bank on again. I don't completely hate using Oladipo in this matchup, but I don't love that salary at 6,600. He's a guy that I reckon I'll find someone else that I want to use instead of him. Murray Hazonia's at 3,600, a great tournament option. The minutes are getting up there for him. He could easily see 27 minutes off the bench and could get hot and drop 30 points pretty comfortably. Definitely not using him in a cash game, but could really pan out in a tournament. Toby Harris at 5,600. Now, his salary is coming down to match his production, which is decent. Still not quite there yet, so I'll steer clear against a team who's a pretty good team defensively. On the Clippers, JJ Redick has been poor lately. I imagine that against his former team and a team with pretty poor defense, Redick could get hot. There could be 30, 35 points coming from him. 4,700 is his salary. Really hard to trust in a cash game, but do like it in a tournament. And Wes Johnson, 4,200. I'm on the Wes Johnson bandwagon. I've been on it for the last 2 years. I like what he can do. This matchup is beautiful for him. He put up 27 in the last game. He's at 4,200. I think 23 to 26 points is not out of the realms of possibility for him. Yeah, he could have a stinker, so I'd probably reserve him for a tournament, but Wes Johnson is playing a lot better and is a guy that I don't reckon many people are going to roster. DeAndre Jordan's at 8,400. Almost lock him in for 40 points with the way he's playing at the moment. He put up 45 in the last one. He's averaging 42 across his last five. He had a minimum score in his last five of 30. At 8,400, he's almost as rock solid as they get. And Chris Paul, 9,700, just feels a little bit expensive for a guy that is only averaging 38 across the last five. I would rather own Johnny Wall at the extra 100, extra 200 bucks than spend 9,700 on Chris Paul. Even with the blowout risk with Wall, but there is a blowout risk that the Clippers destroy the Magic here as well. So weigh that up. Jamal Crawford's been playing really well. 4,700 for him. He's averaging almost 30 points a game across the last three. He's getting extra run at 4,700. He's fine to use. I'm okay in a cash and in tournaments with him, actually. Evan Fournier, he's been reduced significantly lately with Hazonia getting a lot of his minutes. So I don't think we'll be using him for our DFS lineups. The New York Knicks and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are favored by 3.5 points. The total is 196.5 here. Injury-wise, Matt Barnes is the one we need to check on. He is questionable with that hamstring issue. That's really the only one we need to check on. Can someone tell on it? Memphis, does anyone know what's going on with Brandon Wright? He was day-to-day for most of the season, and we just stopped hearing anything about him. I can't find any information about his knee injury. I don't know what is wrong, when he's coming back. It is like he doesn't exist anymore. If anyone knows, if any people in Memphis know, what the hell is going on with Brandon Wright? Does he still play for the team? Is he alive? I know he still plays for the team. I know he's alive. But what is going on? Why can we not hear any information about him? Anyway, Aaron Aflalo, great tournament play, terrible cash game play. 4,900 for him, dropped 34 today. He's just completely up and down. He's at 6,500, Kristaps. Don't love the matchup, don't love using him. In fact, in this game, there is not much that I love at all. 8,200 for Marc Gasol, not bad, but not sure that I'd use him. 8,900 for Mallow. I can get behind using Mallow at that salary. I think that you can get 40 points out of him and feel relatively comfortable that you are going to get 40 points out of Carmelo Anthony. Again, but not many people in this game are great options. I think that's a fair way to say it. If Matt Barnes is out, Zach Randolph at 5,900, you have to have a look at him. He scored 35 in the last one. Jeff Green at 5,700. I say no one's a good option. Jeff Green, I'll put that out there. He's been great lately. He's averaging almost 34 across the last three. His salary has risen. Can he continue this hot streak? I'd say probably not, because he's just not going to be this good a shooter all of the time. But you throw him into a tournament and try and ride him while he's hot. 6,700 for Mike Conley. Probably not. I reckon we can find better players. Langston Galloway at 4,500. Definitely worth having a look at. If he's going to get 35 minutes a night at 4,500, 27, 28 points, it is within range. He's only averaging 25 points over his last five when he was starting most of those games. So he's not great, but 25 at 4,500 is definite value. So I reckon he's a decent cash game play if you're confident he's going to take the minutes away from Calderon. 5,200 for Robin Lopez. He gets a terrible matchup here, but his salary is not high enough for me to be too scared. He's averaging 29 across the last five. He feels like one of the better, more reliable center options on the board. Boston and Cleveland is up next. The Cleveland Cavaliers are favored by 7. The total is 210 points. Matthew Dellavedova for the Cavs is questionable with his hamstring, and Jay Crowder dealing with an ankle problem, which doesn't appear too serious, so thankful if you own Jay Crowder. Both of those guys are a big chance to play, especially Crowder. Kevin Love is at 7,700. A great matchup situation for him here. There's the Kelly Olynyk revenge situation. His lowest score in his last five games, Love, is 34.9. It feels like there is almost not a better cash game power forward on the board than Kevin Love, and even his tournament options are pretty good. I think he's going to be fairly highly owned, but in a cash game, I reckon you almost have to run with him. Same with LeBron at 10,200. He's a 49 guy across the last three. You feel like he's destroyed Boston plenty of times throughout his career. I think this is a great spot for him. And I love Kyrie. He's at 7,000. He's almost been 35 every game for the last few. Now, the problem is the Celtics' backcourt. We know what their defense can do. But I think that he's significantly underpriced enough that we can still use him with a degree of confidence. 5,100 for J.R. Smith. Tournament only, not really trusting him in cash. And 5,400 for Marcus Smart feels a little bit too high. He's been a little bit down lately, not the greatest of matchups going against the Cleveland Cavaliers. A couple of other guys that we need to look at. Tristan Thompson, he's priced at 4,600. He's done nothing recently, but the Celtics front court presents a nice opportunity for him. I definitely not want to trust him in cash games. He was particularly brutal in the last one. Isaiah Thomas at 7,900. Kyrie Irving is a great matchup for opposition point guards. I do like Thomas at that salary. While Avery Bradley at 5,600 is more of a tournament guy. He's been okay lately, averaging 25 across the last three, but nothing too spectacular in that time frame. We know the bigs for the Celtics. Kelly Olynyk, Amir Johnson, Jared Salinger. You throw in Tyler Zeller and Jonas Jerebko now. Throw him into a tournament, especially Zeller, who's at 3,900 and has played big minutes had big production the last two games. He's a tournament option. Olynyk at 4,900 is a tournament option, but really you can't trust any of these guys for cash games. The Sacramento Kings and the Brooklyn Nets. The Kings are favored by 6, and the total is 212 points. This could have a stack of fantasy value. Yeah, injury-wise, there's not much for us to really look at, so that's always good. Wayne Ellington at 3,900. That's a really low salary. You feel like you're going to get 18, 19 points out of him pretty much every night. And you know what? In a cash game, plug him in at 19 points, 20 points. Fill out the rest of your roster with big-name guys. It's not terrible. He gets hot, hits three or four threes, 26 points comes your way, and you're happy with that. I like Thad Young a lot here from Brooklyn at 6,400. He got back on track in the last game. This matchup is supremely positive for him. This is a 33 to 35 point outing looking for Thad Young. And Brook Lopez at 8,900. Centers have been playing fantastically against the Kings. Lopez has been playing fantastically himself anyway. Yes, you have to spend 8,900, but you're almost guaranteed 40 points from Lopez at the moment. So he's a good guy to have a look at. The Donald Sloan, Shane Larkin situation. If you know which guy is going to go off, please let me know. It was Sloan last game, so maybe it's going to be Larkin here. It's probably an avoid situation for most people. Kings players, Darren Collison at 4,600. Just, that's not a big salary. Clearly, he's just going to give you consistent production. This is a great matchup for him. 25 points. I like him even in a cash game here. Tournament, I like him a lot. But in a cash game, I think that he can play well. Boogie Cousins is at 11,000. The Nets have actually been reducing the output of centers recently. 11,000, it just feels a little bit high. I'll probably regret saying that, but I reckon I would fade Boogie and even throw Brook Lopez in there, throw Robin Lopez in there. I would rather save a little bit of money there, and don't want to spend that 11,000. That's a lot of money. Joe Johnson at 5,300, he's very, very inconsistent. It was great in the last game, but I wouldn't be chasing and expecting that sort of value. Well, Rajon Rondo at 8,300, great going up against the Nets, but he's been nowhere near that sort of value. That salary is just way too high for him. Same with Rudy Gay at 7,800. With Boogie Cousins back, I'm not all that keen with using him at that excessive salary. Willie Cauley-Stein just not getting the minutes at the moment, oddly. So, yeah, 4,200 for him. It feels, even that's low, it feels like it's just not going to materialize because he's not getting enough playing time. And Omri Caspi at 5,200, he needs to come under 5,000 for me to be really excited given the way that he's currently being used. The next game, the Chicago Bulls and the Denver Nuggets, there is no spread because we do not know the status of Jimmy Butler, who's dealing with that knee issue that we mentioned earlier. Nikola Mirotic's hematoma surgery, apparently his timetable has been re-amended to being just after the All-Star break again, so he might be back pretty soon, but that's not impacting us for tonight. On the Denver side of things, Jameer Nelson is out. Nikola Jokic is probable with a shoulder, and there was also another injury that popped up for Chicago with Pau Gasol dealing with a hand sprain. If Gasol happens to be out, we'd be looking at Bobby Portis at 3,500 because then he'd have to play 30 minutes next to Taj Gibson. And then it would be awesome to use him. If Gasol plays, we can steer clear of Portis. I really like Nikola Jokic here. The Bulls have been allowing a stack of points to opposition big men. Jokic had a down game in the last one and still scored 25. And at 6,200, he's got 40-50 point upside. Love using him. Also like using Emmanuel Mudiay going up against Derrick Rose at 5,200. No Jameer Nelson. Yes, Randy Foy might get hot, but that's a once in a blue moon occurrence, and a blue moon happened 2 games ago. Don't think it's going to happen here. I think that Mudiay is a solid 25 point sort of player in this one. Ken Faried at 6,100 gets the Bulls front court bump, which I love. The problem with him is minutes, and he hasn't reached 30 points in his last 5, and at 6,100 you sort of want him to go for 30, and I don't really think that's going to happen. Even with Darrell Arthur being called doubtful, I think it just means more minutes for Joffrey Lavernier, to be honest, rather than Faried. They're just not going to extend him and play him 30 minutes, it feels like. Gary Harris at 4,700, got a real positive matchup. He's been playing pretty consistently, giving you 20 points over the last 3 games. Is it enough at 4,700? I don't feel all that confident in it, much like I don't feel confident in Will Barton. He's at 5,900. Throw him into a tournament because the matchup's beautiful, but I'm not trusting him in a cash game. What do you do with Etuan Moore? Well, if Jimmy Butler's out at 4,000, love it. He put up 39 in the last one, but prior to that, he'd been giving you almost nothing. If Butler's out, he becomes cash in tournament. If Butler's in, then he's a tournament option because he does have some ability to put up some decent numbers. Derrick Rose's salary, unsurprisingly, has risen, but he is in play here. He's averaging 31 across the last 3, and if Butler's out, I'm all over using Derrick Rose at 6,200. He dropped 38 in the last one. He would have to take more creation and ball handling responsibilities. If Butler is out, he'd be a guy that I'm looking at. Now, if you hear that Butler's in and everything's fine, at 8,800, I feel like you're going to get 40 points out of him against Denver, and you should feel fairly confident about that. But if he's out, obviously it changes the status of quite a few guys. Pau Gasol at 8,700 just feels a little bit expensive. He's got a really solid floor across his last 5, averaging 35, but I'm not sure he's going to be able to get to that 45 mark, especially if he's dealing with some sort of hand problem. Taj Gibson at 5,300, I like him in cash here. This is 25 to 26 points. You should get bang on 5x value with him, and it's a really positive matchup. Obviously, it's increased if Pau Gasol happens to be out. The next game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Utah Jazz. Definitely a contrast here with the Bucks being horrendously easy to play against, fantasy-wise, the Jazz being terrible. The Jazz are favored by 7 points, and the total here is a not impressive 190. John Henson for the Bucks is questionable with his back issue. OJ Mayo has already been ruled out. If Henson's out, Miles Plumlee will play, but that doesn't really impact us fantasy-wise. I love Derek Favors at 7,300. The Milwaukee bump is fantastic for big men. He put up 38 in the last one. 35 should be relatively comfortable for him in this one. And Rudy Gobert at 7,100 is also in play with a really positive matchup. Rod Hood at 5,600 struggled in the last game mightily, only put up 9 points, but he'd been playing fantastically before that. 5,600 is not a big salary. I think he is a really good option if you're spending up at other positions to get a shooting guard in there at sub 6,000. Jared Bayless at 4,000. Not a great matchup. We don't know what Jason Kidd's going to do with the point guard spot. So Bayless and Carter Williams are off the board for me. Gordie Haywood, 8,100. Just feels a little bit high with everyone back and firing. And Jabari Parker killed everyone in DFS in the last time out the Bucks played. He's at 5,100. Do you think he can get 25 points? I'm not all that confident with him doing that at the moment. He's just been a little bit reduced, and especially going up against this Utah team. Greg Monroe's at 8,000. This is not an appealing matchup with Favors and Gobert with him facing off against them. So I'd expect 30 points from him, but at 8,000, that's not enough. Hal Neto, 3,700. He's played better, but it doesn't translate into fantasy stats. 7,500 for Giannis Antetokounmpo, 7,400 for Chris Middleton. I would be hesitant with both of them. The matchup is not positive, but if I'm using one, I'd rather use it on Giannis, who's been playing a little bit better of late. And you feel confident you can get 32 to 34 from Giannis, I would say. Not many other guys that are worth paying too much attention to here. The last game of the night, the San Antonio Spurs and the Dallas Mavericks. The Spurs are favored by 7. The total is 197. We know that Dirk is out for the Spurs. We know that Manu Ginobili is out with a horrible injury. He had to have surgery on his balls. Not good, Manu. Apparently the word came out that he could have lost one of his nuts in that injury where he got kneed the other night if the doctor hasn't been present. So Manu's going to be out for 3 or 4 weeks. Could be longer. That is obviously a sickening thought to any men listening here that Ginobili has to have testicular surgery. So best of luck to Manu. On the Maverick side of things, Dirk, who is going to be apparently sitting out back-to-backs, is playing this one. This is the first leg of a back-to-back. And Darren Williams is going to be back. So any love we have for JJ Barea is nullified. Start with the Spurs side of things. David West at 4,300 put up a big line in place of Tim Duncan, but hadn't been able to do it in any of the other games. So he remains a tournament option, and a pretty good tournament option because it's a nice matchup and he can go big if he gets the minutes. It just hasn't happened so far. Other Spurs guys, Kawhi at 7,200. He was big in the last game. He is averaging 31 across his last three. At 7,200, though, I'm a little bit hesitant about using him. I would rather, if I'm looking at the Spurs guy, West, obviously, and Danny Green, who's been playing a little bit better, 22 points across his last five. And at 4,200, we know he's got an opportunity to go big. This is not a difficult defensive matchup. With Manu out, maybe he sees an extra 2 to 3 minutes. Danny Green is definitely in play here. LaMarcus Aldridge is at 71. He's been cooking, like really, 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 really fantastic play. Look, there's a chance that he has a stinker, but I'm okay with using LaMarcus Aldridge at only 7,100. Is not a big salary. He dropped 51 in the last game. He's averaging 37 across the last three. Definitely someone to look at. 5,200 for Tony Parker. No thanks. Patty Mills at 39 might get some extra, or should get some extra run with Manu out. So at 3,900, he comes into play. He's averaging over 20 in the last three. He's a guy that you can use in a tournament, and even in a cash game, he's not a horrible play if you're just looking to save some money. Wes Matthews has been horrible, and the matchup is disgusting, so we'll leave him alone for the Mavericks. Darren Williams, not a good matchup coming back from that hip problem, so leave him out of it as well. In fact, there's not many Dallas guys outside of Zaza Pachulia that I'm really keen on. With no Tim Duncan, Zaza should be able to have a decent night down low. 6,300 for him, I would say that 30 points is probably what you're expecting, and that's not bad at that salary. Dirk at 7,000? Yeah, probably not. Look, he was good in the last time he played, dropped 40, but probably not against the Spurs. And Chandler Parsons is going to have Kawhi Leonard on him, so that means we're not caring about Chandler Parsons. Let's have a look at the DFS picks of the day. Point guard, Darren Collison, 4,600, Emmanuel Mudiay, 52, and Johnny Wall, 99. Shooting guard, Marco Bellinelli, 4,000. forgot to mention Bellinelli in the Kings one. He's played over 30 minutes the last two games, started in place of McLemore in the game before, and I think he's a really good punt player at that salary. Rod Hood is at 5,600, and I don't really like any high-priced shooting guards because of the uncertainty with Jimmy Butler's knee. Wes Johnson at small forward, 4,200. Otto Porter, 53, and LeBron James, 10,200. Power forwards Aaron Gordon, 5,000. Thad Young, 64, and Kevin Love, 7,700. And the centers Jordan Hill, 46, Nikola Jokic, 62, and Nikola Vucevic, 7,900. We are done today, guys. I think today's podcast was a bit of a longer one. Yeah, it was huge. So, hey, there was a lot of stuff happening at the start of the show. Again, big thank you comes out from me to all you guys for listening to the podcast, sharing the podcast, reviewing the podcast, liking the podcast, giving me feedback on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, all that sort of stuff has been fantastic. And I do appreciate everything. It has grown significantly over this season. I said 1 million downloads this year is a number that I couldn't even imagine when the podcast started. So a big thanks go out to all of you guys who have helped in this show grow fantastically. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at redrock_bball and make sure you're entering that Instagram contest, and do the same on Facebook at facebook.com/redrockbasketball, where we can turn that into a more interactive group situation. We had some good chats going on with a couple of guys who are actually in the same league and talking about some of the trades that they made today. So go and check that. If you go check out the Steph Curry monstrous line of the night photo that I put up, there's some interesting trade discussion going on in that post. We are done. Yes, we're done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.